inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
Sacred honor is the courage to speak truth, to live out your free speech.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance character, and character hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to At the Core with Walker Waubman and Rick Green. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach, and we are going to jump right in to an interview that I just did with Colton and Sarah Maccabee. Colton is one of the heroes from January 6th that has been abused by his own government, did nothing wrong. This guy absolutely is a hero in my book. Sarah is a hero in my book. You're going to love this. And what a glorious, glorious day. The fact that he was released last week and that they are now going to be able to get on with their life. But this is going to be one of the best interviews you've ever heard here on At the Core. I actually recorded this in my Tavern program, which you can watch at patriotu.com. But let's jump in. Here's Colton and Sarah Maccabee.
Welcome back to the Tavern. Thanks for staying with us. I got a double mug clank because Colton and Sarah Maccabee are with us. Hey, guys. Welcome to the Tavern. Look at that. And matching mugs. Sarah had that one last time, so I was trying to prove to her that I had the same mug, and Colton shows up with it. Mm. What a treat, man. Colton, welcome home, man. Just an honor to have you here in the Tavern and to see you out of the gulag. Man, welcome.
Thanks, appreciate it. Glad to be here.
Well, you I know you are, but you ought to be so proud of your wife. She's been such a warrior. I know this has had to be near to impossible for y'all. The things you've been through, I don't know why God took you through this. I kind of do, I guess. I have a guess of how he's going to use both of you in the future to help save our country. But man, I'm just thankful that you're here, and I really appreciate y'all giving us some time. I mean, you hadn't been out 48 hours, and y'all are willing to take the time to come on. So really, really appreciate it. First question is really light. What was your first meal out? Where'd you go? What'd y'all do?
Well, my first official meal was, goodness gracious. Where did we go? Steak and shrimp. Yeah, I had steak and shrimp at the hotel, actually.
That's great. Steak and shrimp. I love it. I love it. Well, let's start. You know, we of course have told your story a lot, not only here on the Tavern, but on every program I get a chance to talk about this. But Sarah came on, you know, while you were in and told a lot of the story. So many lies about you. I was really glad the Blaze article came out this week to help set some of that record straight. But I guess just backing up, you know, tell a little bit of what it was like while you were in, because we've kind of told the story of what happened that day and how much they twisted this stuff. The fact that you're a law enforcement officer yourself, that you know, were helping law enforcement officers. We had a good visit on Flashpoint. You talked about the fact that you just couldn't not help that day.
Right. Yeah. Well, being in on that side, call it ironic if you want to. I mean, I wore a badge for 7 years. Now I'm wearing a prisoner uniform. Mm. And, like, I would sit there. Sometimes I would just sit there and think, this isn't real life. Like, this is a dream. I can, you know, I'll wake up sometime today or something. But, no, it got real. And, I mean, it was rough at the beginning, you know. People didn't like us, called us terrorists. They, you know, we went through all the stuff through D.C. and the hatred there from my judge, my jury, the prosecution, D.C. officials, the inmates. I mean, it was rough at the very start.
How often for you, you know, I keep thinking about the fact your own government is doing this to you, right? This is, you know, you've sworn an oath to defend and, you know, all of those things. And I know you had to have nights like that where you're thinking, man, this is my government that's doing this to me. I mean, how did you deal with that? And you said something on Flashpoint that I thought was really important. You had your bouts with God, right? Angry with God. That's okay. You know, Jacob did too, and probably all of us at some point in history. But for you especially, you know, what kind of got you through that part to not give up hope on your own nation?
It was really, really hard not to be negative about it. But you know, I couldn't fathom 4 more years of Biden. I mean, I figured America would wake up at least once or something, you know. But I couldn't let them beat me, you know, I couldn't let them win. And yeah, I mean, the war's just begun now. I'm out.
That's right.
We are going to make some changes. I'm glad Trump's in. I'm glad, you know, he's getting his cabinet members in. But I got some work to do as well.
Yeah.
You know, with when you have a corrupt government, they go after their political enemies. And I never thought in my life I'd be a political prisoner in America.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that was probably, well, I even said on the opening for the program, I talked about the fact that had it not been for how far they went and how much they demonized their political opponents, you know, Joe Biden standing in front of the Independence Hall and with the red lights and the military guys and calling all of us, you know, half the country his enemy you know, threats to democracy, which we are because, you know, we're a republic, so we're certainly a threat to democracy. The founders called it mobocracy. But the fact that he brought it to that point, and that our government, with our dollars, with our money, with our Department of Injustice, was used to go after guys like you in the fashion that they did. Like, it's one thing, and Sarah and I talked about this on the program before, it's one thing to have actual justice. Okay, break down every video, every second, and go after the ones that actually, you know, did things that were wrong and exonerate the ones that didn't. That's not what they did, man. It was a pox on all houses. They had to lie about you in order to convict you. They had to rig the system in Washington, D.C. It was just a complete travesty of justice. And so it would be easy to lose faith in your country at that point and say, you know, forget it, man. I'm moving to Costa Rica and we're going to live on the beach for the next 50 years. I wouldn't blame both of you for doing that. But yet I hear in your voice a resolve like Donald Trump's that we're going to right the ship. We're going to right the wrongs. We're going to bring back actual blind justice and equal justice. That's not going to be easy, man. That's going to take us a while. That doesn't happen overnight with an executive order.
Yeah, you're right. And, you know, if it was easy, everybody would be doing it. But I feel like God has called me for this moment. I mean, he's trained me. He's led me down this path for a reason. Growing up, you know, with my career and now with prison, I've seen both sides. I've seen how it is two-tiered and how, you know, we can sit there and change it from the inside or we can change it from the outside. Either way, it's getting changed.
Yeah.
And I feel like January 6th was our Boston Tea Party.
Amen. Yeah, they tried to make it the Rostock Fire, the 1933 Rostock Fire in Germany. They tried, that was the whole point of everything they did, was try to demonize you guys and demonize all patriots. They tried to make it like, that's why they had to call it an insurrection and all the things that they did, because they wanted to use it to completely silence and destroy the opposition. And they came close. They came very close. I think the fact that we survived it, the fact that we now have the chance to go on offense and take ground back, is a testament to the Constitution itself, and that it wasn't completely wiped out while so much of it was being ignored. I mean, I know your due process rights were completely trampled, the 1500 J6ers completely trampled, but it wasn't completely destroyed. We had the chance to hold on to the tatters. Like, you look at the McNaughton Peyton on this side of me and is literally pulling the Constitution out of the fire. You look at the McNaughton Peyton on this side of me and it's you, it's you J6ers in solitary confinement. They almost did it, man, but they didn't. And we now have the chance to take it back. We restored patriotism, but now we've got to actually rebuild liberty. And so I knew Sarah had it. I mean, last summer when you were here and the things that you said here at the Patriot Academy campus and the fire that came out of you, I knew you had it. Now I see in Colton the same thing and the same resolve. So I think you're going to be a power couple for restoring the Constitution is what I see.
Yeah, it's, they have attacked us. So what do they think? We're going to sit back and be quiet?
Right.
I mean, you'd be a fool to think that.
Well, had they had their way, and look, there's probably some that said, you know what, the easiest thing for me to do is to be quiet, right? To fall into silence. That's what happens with most people. You're not a summer soldier, though. You're not a sunshine patriot. You're a winter soldier. I've been joking about the fact I wasn't there to, cheer on the president because I went to the inauguration 20 years ago and froze my buns off and said I'm never going back. But I realized that makes me a sunshine patriot. You know, I would have probably bailed on Washington if the propane ran out of the heaters, which of course they didn't have. But anyway, I can't imagine what it was like for you in the gulag. You said today on Flashpoint you ended up in Rochester, so I didn't even realize that. So how different was it from prison to prison? It sounded like it was a lot better once you got to Rochester.
Yeah, I think I been to 11 or 12 different facilities.
Are you kidding me?
I wish I was, but I was in D.C. twice. But the comparison between Rochester and D.C. is night and day. I got there. It looked like a college campus. I was confused. I thought I was going to college for real. I mean, green grass, trees. You had animals, you had like geese, squirrels.
Wow.
Just running around on campus. You see people moving around. I'm like, holy cow. Like, is this real?
You know, were you allowed to go see him, Sarah, at that point? I mean, how often were y'all able to actually see each other during this?
Yeah, so, well, for the first time, it was 597 days from the time that they took him, August 17th of 2021, until it was April 1st of 2023, the first time that we were able to have visitation. And
Wait a minute. You got to say that again.
Yeah.
500, how many days?
597 days.
597 days before you got to see each other. I can't even, wait a minute, let me do that. That's a year, that's almost 2 years. That's a year and three quarters.
Yeah. Yeah, and even then, the first time that I saw him, I had to travel from Tennessee to Washington, D.C. to see him, a 10-hour trip, and I got to see him behind glass for 30 minutes.
Mm. Well, first of all, the fact that your marriage survived is a miracle. I know there were a lot of guys that got the Dear John letters and a lot of – which, hey, it's hard, man. That is – you know, I mentioned this only to my staff so far and our coaches, but I experienced a tenth of 1% of what – like nothing compared to what you went through. But, you know, when I was 10, my dad was in prison for about 6 months, all a political thing. And so even going and visiting him, I remember that as a kid. And then I had a corrupt DA come after me when I was in politics, you know, 25 years ago. And we had a little bit of that black cloud following us around. Nothing like what you've been through. But the idea that – and so I only say that to say just experiencing a little bit of it, I can kind of relate to the pain of the government coming after you and the hopelessness that there's no way I can fight this. And that's why a lot of times the families do give up and say, I just can't, we're never going to win. We're never going to get him out. And they leave. You didn't, Sari. I mean, you know, maybe you came close. I don't know, but you know, however the Lord got y'all through it, I am praying for your marriage and just, I hope it blossoms and thrives and that the Lord just blesses y'all with about 47 children. And is that too many? Okay, maybe. 45. No, whatever it's going to be. I just, man, I'm so thrilled that y'all did hold on. And Sarah, you had, you know, even when you were here last summer, I could see this fire in you. And you said, you know, I'm angry. And I remember Kara, my wife, saying to you, you should be angry. We feel that with you. You had every right to be angry. And even Colton, when you said today, your anger with the Lord. And so it's totally fine. I think that's God expects that whenever these kind of things go on. That struggle, I mean, isn't that what, you know, Jacob means to struggle with the Lord or Israel? So anyway, I just, man, I applaud y'all for being able to get through that. I'm talking too much. I want to hear from y'all. So you got to see him in Rochester, you got to see him in D.C. That was after a year and three quarters. How often then did you get to go see him once he got moved to Rochester?
Once he got moved to Rochester, I went up about once a month to go see him. We were at that point, you know, I mean, don't get me wrong. It's federal prison and there's nothing good about federal prison. But from what he had experienced in the other facilities he was in, and especially, I mean, he was in D.C. for probably about 25 months total. From the time that he was incarcerated to the time that he was sentenced and moved. And so that was the worst of the worst. Everything you hear about the D.C. gulag, you know, amplify it by 10. And he's a living testament of what went down there, all of the different things. Just they tried to destroy them mentally, emotionally, yeah, spiritually, financially. And they didn't for the majority of it. You know, to see these individuals walk out on January 20th and see them reunited with their families, it's definitely going to be a healing journey along the way. But just the mere fact that the Lord protected them. And I've always said, I believe it's by the grace of God that these individuals are going to be okay, you know, and they're different paths. Just like you said, we can't sit back and judge the people that took the plea deals or the divorces or whatever happened in the families, because everybody has had a unique walk when it has come to January 6th. But I think that it just shows, because of their unique walk, they can connect with different people in society. And that when Colton's talking about like his next steps and stuff, the thing we have always talked about is to never let these sacrifices go in vain.
Quick interruption. Stay with me, folks. This is Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach. We'll be right back with Colton and Sarah McAbee here on At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green.
At the Core podcast are available at AFR.net. Now, back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to At the Core with Walker Waubman and Rick Green. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach. Thanks for staying with me. Had to take a quick break there, but we're going to jump right back into my interview with Colton and Sarah McAbee.
Thing we have always talked about is to never let these sacrifices go in vain.
That's right. That's right. Absolutely right. And I think that's the reason for, you know, it's the same as like the COVID crackdowns and all of that insanity, not just saying, oh, let's all move on. No, you got to prevent it from happening again. It's the same thing here. We have to prevent this kind of injustice from happening again. We have to get people to absolutely have a passion for blind justice and equal justice. And so when you see the injustice here, it makes you want the right kind of justice and the right kind of blind justice. And I opened the program saying, this is the beginning of justice, and we don't have full justice until those who perpetrated this have to pay a price for this. You can't just let you guys out and say, okay, everything's okay now. No, there has to be consequences. There has to be actual justice in order to prevent it from happening in the future. And to that point, I know you guys have filed a civil suit for some of the injustice that you received. Can you update us on that? And are there others that are going to do the same thing, I hope?
Yeah. Oh, you want to go ahead and do that?
Yeah. So when he was assaulted in the D.C. jail, we opened a civil lawsuit against the lieutenant who had sprayed him while he was handcuffed and in the jail itself. But I do hope that these individuals go back and sue for their civil rights. You know, I mean, now they're talking about $50 billion lawsuits against the Department of Justice and that sort of thing. And don't get me wrong, that's absolutely where we have to start. But our whole hope is that these judges, the corrupt prosecutors, they stand trial for Amen. Their misconduct that they held for January 6 defendants. You know, they completely clogged the D.C. court system, that they didn't even prosecute 67% of crimes in D.C. because the court system couldn't handle it, because they were prosecuting people like Colt and MAGA Granny, you know, for doing nothing on January 6th. And they had true murderers and rapists walking the streets of D.C. But the way that they treated these individuals completely obliterated their constitutional rights right in front of them. There was a reason they didn't allow any media to be in these courtrooms, because the American public would have been outraged about this a very long time ago. But, right. you know, these judges, these prosecutors, they need to stand trial. They need to not only lose their bar card and never be able to try anything ever again, but in my opinion, they need to sit in the D.C. gulag and be treated the way that these individuals treated. Or, in my opinion, they created treason. And when you commit treason, there is one penalty for treason, and that absolutely needs to be reestablished in America, because what I always say is, it's not about what happened the last 4 years. It's about setting up the next 250 years for the Amen. Future generations to come in America. And this is absolutely a pivotal point in America, that we have to make examples out of people.
100%. You know, I got one of my times of being blocked on Facebook or Twitter, or one of them was sharing a Steve Dace post that basically had the noose and said, after a trial, of course, but this is what I mean, Fauci especially, as many people has died as a result of him. But I mean, to me, a minimum, an absolute minimum, just a starting out of the block is absolutely having impeachment hearings for these judges. And, you know, if they're going to claim, because most of them were federal judges, right? I guess they're all federal judges. So they're all going to claim their lifetime appointment, which is not what the Constitution says. As it says, for good behavior, if there is bad behavior, if there's any definition of bad behavior, it's what they did to you and what they did to the other defendants. So impeachment at an absolute minimum. We ought to be wiping out every single one of them, getting them off the bench so they can't continue to do things like this. But like you said, trials against them as well, and especially these in the cover of night, guards and marshals and others that did the hideous things to you guys, and then the little things like and you could probably confirm for me, because you're in contact with more of them than me, but even like yesterday and the day before, even when they're releasing a lot of these guys, putting them on a bus and hauling them across town where the families can't greet them and they got to go find, I mean, just stupid things like that, to just keep digging it in and keep digging it in. And that's minor compared to the beatings and everything else that took place. There has to be consequences for that stuff. 100%. Oh, no, sorry, I'm ranting.
It absolutely does, because they tried to destroy these people. And I said every single one of them are going to be like a phoenix and rise out of the ashes. But the history needs to be rewritten, because right now the mainstream media still to this day is pushing a false narrative that it was an insurrection and that these people are domestic terrorists. And yet they don't look, they turn a blind eye to what Joe Biden did on his way out by pardoning cop killers and rapists and people on death row that, you know, should have been sitting there for far less than what they did. But then Donald Trump comes in and keeps his promises to these people and pardons them. And now investigations will be underway, which is what we've always said. It can't just be the stroke of a pen on a paper for these defendants, because America deserves answers. We have never seen this sort of injustice on the level that it has. And it's not just about January 6th. You see today, President Trump signed the pardons for pro-lifers. It's the same thing for them. They had their constitutional rights dissolved in front of them as well. And so it's about all of these little things, because we had always said when it was unsafe to rise up and to talk about this stuff is that the American people don't know that they are next. These people were just the beginning. They picked their constitutional rights, dissolved them, and threw them into jail. And these people are our neighbors. They're the people that we go to church with. And so it's like, if they were going to do it to them, it was only a matter of time till they were knocking on your front door. And so the FBI absolutely has to be dismantled. The Department of Justice needs to be reconfigured. And I think that we have a prime opportunity to make sure that their voices are heard, their stories are told, and that history, they stand up on the right side of history.
100%. Man, you're so good. I'm telling you that everything you just said, I 100% agree. And I used to be, you know, a defender of the FBI 5 years ago. You know, they were heroes, all that. No, it's too corrupt. You can't fix it. You have to dismantle it. I don't even think constitutionally they should exist. There's nothing in the Constitution that authorizes a federal law enforcement agency like that, other than the Border Patrol at the border. So anyway, absolutely agree. Department of Justice, you got a clean house completely. And I'm so glad you said what you said, Sarah, about it's not just the J6ers. It's you go all the way down the line. These pro-lifers, my friend Dr. Young from right here in Fredericksburg, where the DOJ goes after him. This guy was Doctor of the Year just a few years ago. But because of his stance against COVID, because he was a Trump supporter, they threw the whole weight of the government against him. He's facing, I think, 10 years now. And so it's just so many people like that that they did this to. And they literally hunted down political opponents. They figured out who's against us politically, and that's who they went after. If there's ever any kind of a selective prosecution situation, this was it. Let's talk about you guys next. I want to know, you know, what we can do, how people can pray for y'all. I know this is crazy. You're 48 hours out, but you know what do you think is next, and what can we do to invite you down to Fredericksburg? Y'all come get away. Let us put you up in a cottage and y'all enjoy a few days. I mean, what can we do to serve y'all?
You know, that's a good question, and I've given it a lot of thought. I mean, I don't know what's out there right now. You know, some opportunities are coming my way, and I'm going to look at every single one of them. But I really don't know.
Forget. Don't go back into law enforcement. Come down here to Fredericksburg and be a range instructor for Patriot Academy. And Sarah got, you know, start speaking as a Constitution. We'd love for y'all to come do that. I mean, just open offer, or just come visit and hang out for a week or two and relax. I know you'd probably rather be on a beach than in Fredericksburg, Texas. But at any rate, I mean, I know you got to have time to figure that out. But Sarah, I do want to talk about the foundation, because first of all, thank you guys. Y'all have already donated from your foundation. You're out here trying to do all these things, and you took money out of that to help what we're doing in Fredericksburg with Jenny McCombs and the J6 Road Home. That's coming right out of my church at the bridge. But tell us about more. I know we talked about it last time you were here, but catch us up on what's going on with your foundation and how that's helping other J6 defendants as well.
Absolutely. You know, Stand in the Gap was birthed out of the plight of January 6th defendants, because all of the organizations that state that they are there for political persecution, they weren't. We were on a lonely island, and so nobody was coming to save us. And so we stepped up and said, you know what, we're going to save our own. And so that's where Stand in the Gap was birthed out of. And, you know, looking back over the years, we've helped over 100 families be reunited via visitation. And we helped 5 defendants get appellant attorneys to take their cases to the appellant court, as well as all the way up to the Supreme Court to petition them. And we are proud to announce that that part is over. We will no longer be sending people to the prisons because they are all out thanks to Donald Trump. But that we set Stand in the Gap up. We always said it started with January 6th, but it doesn't end with January 6th. And so now we are pivoting to justice reform. We're helping reentry for these individuals when they come out to go home to the Road Home Project, get their feet under them. Because like I said earlier, everybody's story is different. And the fact some have homes to go home to, some have families to go home to, but then there's others that don't. So it's the community that's going to continue to rally around them because, you know, we're not just going to leave them when those prison doors opened up and said, you know, good luck. It was great supporting you the last 4 years, because I believe each of these people, it is more than what they just did the last 4 years. I think that was the foundation for, you know, hopefully they're running for government positions. I hope,
yes.
the same people that didn't help them, you know, their representatives ignored them. I hope they challenge them in primary,
yes.
Speak to their donors, but we have to be the ones to empower them because as much as we don't like it, they are institutionalized to an extent. And so we have to help them get back on their feet, get their mental health back together, because we have a prime time in America, at least for the next 2 years, to make some change. And then ultimately, you know, it, going into justice reform, it's not just the prison reform side of things. It's the justice reform side, because we never want this to happen again to Americans.
You know, you mentioned, I mean, this 2 years, I was just talking to Caitlin Mervar, who's one of our Patriot Academy grads that did the MAGA Mouse. I don't know if y'all have read her MAGA Mouse book, but it's great. And she's been just a champion for so many of the J6 defendants and helped keep me informed about a lot of this stuff that was going on. But anyway, we were talking about pressing the gas. I mean, right now, it's like Jeremy Brown. We can't leave him behind, even though they convoluted his charges with that stupid grenade that they – anyway, that whole thing is a mess. We have to press the gas now. And I wanted you to know, Sarah, I think J6 Road Home really was birthed because of some of the things you said while you were here. You convicted me and a lot of other people in the room because you talked about the fact the church was not doing what Jesus specifically told us to do. I mean, we're supposed to visit those in prison. We're supposed to be doing this, and nobody was helping you from the church, and nobody helping with that. And so I think that whole thing birthed out of it. It kind of put a real conviction in my heart and my pastor and a lot of other people at the Bridge here in Fredericksburg. And so anyway, I just wanted you to know, because of your boldness, I mean, think of all the seeds you planted over the last 4 years, all the places you went to speak, all the media, all the times we pushed out your message, all of that. You don't know yet all the fruit that's going to come from that. I think you're going to be, you know, the old Ray Bolt song, thank you for giving to the Lord. I think you're going to see fruit from that for decades and decades. We got a lot more work to do, but I just want to tell you, man, there's already fruit coming from what you planted in the last few years. I love the justice reform focus that you're shifting to, and we want to help with that all we can. I mean, think of all the J6 defendants, like you're saying, that are going to end up running for office. Think of all of our Patriot Academy grads and Constitution coaches that are running for office that we can get on this justice reform, the civil justice reform that Joey Lynn is going to be working on. I mean, all of those things, man, I see tremendous victory, but it's going to be a lot of work. We have to press the gas and take it. This is a carpe diem, you know, seize the day moment, man. We need to all go watch Dead Poets Society and see that scene, right? I mean, this is a time to seize the day, and y'all are going to be leading the way. Stand in the Gap, I think, is going to be a critical piece of that, no doubt.
No, we so appreciate your support. And it's because of people like you that weren't afraid to bring us on and give us a platform to talk to Americans that had no idea what was going on. Or maybe they did, but they didn't know the extent of it. And then they saw themselves that it very well could have been them. I can't tell you how many people I met over the years saying, I was there. And I've been waiting for somebody to come knock on my door. So thank you for standing up and speaking out for us, because at that point in time, they were just too afraid to do so. And I say now, we absolutely have to roll up our sleeves and go to work, because there was a shift on November 6th in the wee hours of the morning where Americans had hope restored in their great nation. And so now they're no longer afraid to talk about the stolen election, to talk about COVID and our southern border and, you know, the abortion clinics, and to talk about January 6th. And so, you know, all of the work that all of these advocates did prior to January 6th, not necessarily has paid off yet. It did with the pardons and that sort of thing, but it definitely laid the groundwork for what the future looks like, because people do feel convicted in their heart to give back to their nation, because America was once the greatest nation in the world. And you would have asked me the last 4 years, and I wouldn't have hesitated to tell you that it's not the greatest nation in the world. And I will say right now that hope was restored for us to make these changes. But, you know, in the Bible, it says, I believe, and I say this all the time, that Colt and all of these individuals were chosen for such a time as this. But it says in Esther, that particular verse, people just like to pick and choose, you know, they pick and choose out of the Bible what works for them. But that verse says that he chose Esther to rise up and to take care of the Jews in the area that she lived in. And it says that, you know, she was chosen. It says, comma, but if you don't rise up, I will kill you and your father's family, and I will find somebody else for the job. Comma, right. But maybe you were born for such a time as this. And so, you know, I just, for the last 4 years, I would just go out to people and say, find whatever the Lord puts on your heart, whether it's January 6th, whether it's what's going on with the indoctrination of kids in our school system, but whatever it is that the Lord puts on your heart, don't let it sit there. He put it on there for a reason. So take action. Everybody has a part in this journey. I mean, it literally takes a village. And I still tell people that to this day, just because we won the election, just because President Trump is doing exactly what he said he was going to do, doesn't mean that it's over. This is how we got in the position that we are, is because of apathy, which means enough good people sat back and have done nothing. Right. And so we, you know, what we love Donald Trump, but he's not our savior. Jesus Christ is our savior, and he gives us free will on this earth. And so we must ensure that we are following what he has put out in front of us.
Preach, girl. Preach. Oh, my goodness. So good. So good. I could go off on so many things you just said, but that was just, I mean, primo. Absolutely right. 100%. And I love the shift, because it's like you said, and you could feel it starting last summer when you were here, that shift from, you know, everybody was afraid to stand with you, afraid to talk about it. I mean, you know, I even told you, I was like, at the very beginning, even when Joy Lynn called me and was going to come over and tell her story, I was like, I don't know. Maybe they did swerve, you know, maybe they did, you know, swerve into the bus, or I don't know, maybe they did, you know, break the glass or whatever. And at this point, I had my own kind of transition throughout that whole thing. At this point, I'm like, I don't care if you broke glass. At this point, you paid the price and you've already done enough, you know? So I'm like, not just the good guys like you, Colt, that didn't do anything wrong that day, but even the guys that did stuff that was wrong, I'm like, they paid the price. Enough is enough. It's time to let them out as well.
Sorry to interrupt you again, folks. Quick break. We'll be right back. You're listening to At the Core with Waka Wildman and Rick Green.
At the Core podcasts are available at AFR.net. Now, back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to At the Core with Walker Wobbin and Rick Green. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach. Let's jump right back in with Colton and Sarah McAbee for the final few minutes of our time with them.
So I'm so glad it was the blanket pardon. I actually think, you know, and I know they're still looking at a couple of these commutations, but I think at this point that's what had to be done. And obviously I'm glad I've been forgiven for my sins and the things that I did wrong. For those folks, we have to do the same thing. But I just think he's going to use y'all in such a mighty way to help restore this. I'm excited to lock shields with you and come alongside you in any way that we can. And I just pray God's favor. I pray that you have discernment on which battles to fight, because you're going to be given even more of a platform at this point, and you're going to have a lot of people tugging at you and pulling you to do things. So I just pray he just gives you total clarity and makes it crystal clear, this battle, this interview, this, you know, state to go work in legislation or whatever, it's going to be coming at you fast, and I just pray he gives you complete clarity on where to go with it, and you just let us know how we can stand with you for sure.
Well, we so appreciate you. Thank you.
Yes, thank you so much.
Well, God bless y'all. Let's do this again soon.
And we will get them back. There's no doubt about it. I think for such a time as this, they've been raised up. We're going to jump into another interview from the tavern. Rebecca Laverance, also raised up by God. She's the praying grandma out of Colorado. We've had her on the program before. Had a chance to chat with her after the pardon and just have to share it with you. We're not going to be able to get the whole thing in, but I want to get most of it in. Here's Rebecca Laverance.
Welcome back to the tavern. Thanks for staying with us. Always good to have the praying grandma, Rebecca Laverance, with us and her son, who she's going to introduce us to. You guys got a mug to clink with me here in the tavern? There we go. Awesome. Hey, show a close-up of that 1776. What's it say there?
Bring it over. Can you bring it over?
Yeah, here we go.
It just says 1776 on it.
Nice. It almost looks like a Liberty Bell. That's pretty good.
Yeah. This one has our family crest on it, Lavrens.
Oh, how cool is that? I love it. Okay, so Rebecca, introduce us to your son first off.
This is the one who started it all, Michael Lawrence. He's the one who said, "Mom, you need to pray about going to the Stop the Steal rally."
Nice.
2021.
So Michael, good to meet you. I've met your two sisters, but we have not met yet. So good to meet you, man.
You too. Great to be here. Thanks for having us.
Well, thanks for being a patriot and for standing with your mom through all this. Rebecca, obviously, you know I love you and so thankful for you and your patriotism, your perseverance, your ability to have joy in the fight. And now here we are with a lot of joy. But you had joy even in the midst of the storm, which is what was so miraculous and only God-given. Now we can all smile with you. I understand you got to cut that ridiculous monitoring bracelet off of your ankle a little earlier today.
Yeah, that's why Michael is here with me at the house. We actually did a video of Facebook Live of the cutting ceremony.
Oh, we're going to have to show some B-roll of that in here in the tavern. So you went live with it, huh?
Yeah, we went live with it. Actually, I didn't want to cut off because I didn't want to, you know, if I cut it off, does that make me by my action, like I'm agreeing with everything they're pardoning on and I can't appeal? I was kind of leery about all this, but
yeah.
I did talk to my attorneys and because actually my probation officer was getting a little bit feisty with me. She said, "We need that monitor off immediately, and I'm coming out now to get it."
Wow. I mean, really? Like, okay, so we're going to harass you to put one on you, and then we're going to harass you to take it off? I mean, exactly. There's no end.
It was something else. Yeah, she's working it out immediately.
Wow. Man, these people. I'm convinced. I'm curious about both of your takes on this as well. And we had Sarah and Colt McAbee on a little earlier talking about the same thing. But I'm convinced that real justice doesn't happen until not only you're freed, the others are freed, your record's cleaned up, there's restitution. But I think there has to be consequences for those that perpetrated all of this evil and that harassed y'all and made your lives miserable all this time. I think all these judges need to be impeached. I think these for the ones that were in prison and got abused in prison, I think there has to be consequences for those guards. I mean, I think that there has to be consequences for the actions so it doesn't happen again. What do y'all think about that?
Yeah. Well, that's exactly right. And that's why I had to have a little time, and I had a long talk with my attorneys and my paralegal this morning because there's some things going on that we really need to be careful what we're doing, because I think as an attorney, maybe you understand this more. And I tried to explain it on the Facebook live that we did before I took the monitor off. When we were pardoned, that means we were forgiven, but it doesn't erase the conviction. And so if they erase all this stuff, then we're still going to have those precedents that it's okay. It's not okay to have a constitutional First Amendment right at the Capitol, which they addressed, remember, from my trial. And in fact, right now, well, let me backtrack a little bit. I want to say this part.
Sure.
You'll understand. Maybe you can explain this a little bit better, because as in our government, we have three branches of government, the executive, the judicial, and the legislative branch, right? So the government, or the executive branch, which is President Trump, he has authority to give an executive order to pardon us, but he does not have the authority to turn around a conviction. And so that will be on this forever. That's part of the judicial system. So we have to go through the judicial process to make an appeal and get that overturned. Because my purpose, and you know that from the beginning, I want these cases overturned so that in future generations, if they have some kind of thing, let's say we don't have President Trump, we have another Biden administration or something, heaven forbid. But if we do, then those cases, those precedences will be in place. And then something like this happens, then they'll convict everybody again. And then we'll have to do this whole process again. And
it
makes no sense to me. And my attorney said they just got a motion for one of their cases. My attorneys have 13 cases that they're appealing, which includes mine. And if I'm saying this right, they got an order from the judge from a different case of mine that they cannot appeal the case because there's nobody prosecuting them anymore. They want to wipe it away so we can't even do an appeal. So my attorney, Roger Roots, is filing an emotion. He's going to send me a copy of it that's going to go to the judge tonight. And he said it's going to be breaking news probably because we have to stop them from trying to stop us from making appeals.
That's right.
People want to be free. They don't want to be in prison. They haven't had due process. I understand that. I haven't had it that hard. I get to be in my house, you know, and stay in my bedroom and whatever I want to do. But at the same time, if they're just going to get rid of us all, then what happens to all the misinformation, the entrapment and all the stuff that they withheld at my trial? Is that just going to disappear?
No, I agree with you 1,000%. I think it has to go beyond the stroke of a pen of a president. Otherwise, you just seesaw back and forth every 4 years. I think the appeals here are very important to get the precedent of actually overturning some of these actions. And then I think there has to be prosecution of the people that manipulated the system, that lied, that were dishonest, that did things they knew was wrong, and the use and the weaponization of our government and our agencies. I think if we all just go, you know, kumbaya, let's hold hands and sing and, you know, all that good stuff. If we do that, then it's coming back in 4 years or 8 years or 12 years or whenever it is that if they get their hands on the lever of power again, they will do this again. These are evil people. They have to be stopped. They frankly have their power has to be destroyed. Even if we want to destroy them as a person, we have to destroy their ability to wreak havoc on the American people. So I couldn't agree with you more. I don't know what that process is going to look like or how it's going to take place. I'm so glad you have been willing to do this from the beginning, to not take a plea deal in the beginning, to not just willy-nilly accept the pardon, but to actually get legal counsel and think through it and make sure that you're preserving your right to appeal. I couldn't agree with you more. I think that's got to be done. And I hope it's again elevates your voice, you know, and gives you even more of a platform. I have so enjoyed reading your emails. It's always an encouragement. It's always, you know, honestly, I have my days where I get down and I'm like, man, I don't want to get up and fight another day. And you just you sock me upside the head anytime I'm feeling lazy or wimpy, and make me realize, okay, praying grandma can do it, I can do it.
No.
She probably did that to you your whole life, right, Michael?
Yeah, but, the tables have turned. I've given her a hard time now, so.
Yeah. What's the first thing you're going to do now that you could not bound by this home arrest and all that you had to? What are you going to travel? What are you going to do?
Go get some ice cream, Rick. I don't know. I mean, it's really still strange because I don't have to go out and feed my chickens when the government tells me to. I can do it when I want. But I don't know. I really don't know. I'm going to keep fighting for this, whatever it is. But it'll be nice to know that I can go travel to another state, travel to Texas to see the...
Yes. You got to come see the desk that you sponsored. And I, you know what? I would love to do this. I was just talking off air with the Maccabees about this. But, man, I think we need to have a J6 week at the campus. I think we ought to have a full-blown, you know, patriot experience, legislative opportunity for a bunch of J6ers to experience what it's like to be a legislator, and then they go home and run for the legislature. And let's start absolutely filling up our public servant offices with people that have had the boot of government on their neck. I think we'd see real change at that point.
Oh, definitely, Rick. And I think you're doing the absolutely best thing that we need to do. When I see the corruption when you're in D.C., it's just like, I can't. We have to have the people that are not willing to be get into that position of representing us and then turning their backs and because of money and power and greed.
Let's have some fun. So you got to have your whole family right there in the rotunda for the inauguration. 4 years later, after all of the lying about you and the name calling and the everything that happened to you, how did it feel on Monday to be in there for the inauguration, which was essentially a vindication and a halting of the narrative and the lies? I mean, that had to be pretty awesome.
Yeah. Well, first of all, we weren't in the rotunda, but we were in the Emancipation Hall.
Well, but you got pictures in the rotunda that right after or before. I don't know when that was. But didn't you get some? I thought your pictures with Conor McGregor and Evander Holyfield and all that was that in another room? I should have looked closer at the pictures.
That was in the Emancipation Room.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. See, I should know that. I've given tours in all those rooms. I was so amazed that you're standing there. My two notorious meets notorious, right? My notorious grandmother and my notorious fighter got to meet, and apparently Connor really took a liking to you.
Oh yeah, that there was a real spiritual significance behind that, because when we were seated, were you telling me this?
When we were seated, of course, Laura, when we walked into the building, we were with a group of people and everybody was being led down the hallway, and Laura met us, or my sister met us, and said, "Hey, come with me this way," and she brought us down another hallway, so we were one of the first ones in the room, and she sat us down where we could be seated because a lot of the seats were reserved. And then I don't know, 5 minutes later, their entourage. It was Conor McGregor, Evander Holyfield, the Paul brothers, Theo Vaughn, Danica Patrick. Those guys were all together, and they
walked. Whoa, whoa, wait! I didn't see that. But you met Theo Vaughn? Are you kidding me?
Yes. In fact, if you look for the video, you'll see it on social media. Look for the video when he fell out of the chair. I'm on the back. I'm at the end of the video. My sister gave me one of that. But
love that kid. I don't know. I mean, he's so entertaining to me because he's just so blunt and genuine and just like raw. I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And Danica Patrick. That's awesome.
Right in front of me.
Like, so they all came and sat around us.
Place the camera on
and
wow.
So that's interesting. And
that's cool.
That's what Mama said. It's interesting how we're surrounded by a bunch of fighters.
That's right. That's right.
And she's a strong.
That's perfect. I love that.
Thanks. Well, the strongest of all those guys by your son.
But yeah, so then during the event, you know, Connor was kind of by himself, and you know, he was getting a lot of people taking pictures and asking him questions and stuff. We didn't really talk to him, but then when we got on the bus to go back to the place where we met, we got on the bus and Connor was sitting in the back in the corner by himself, and there was only about four or five chairs. There was, you know, my mom and my sister and my wife and my sister's friend. We all got there. Was the only chairs that were left were the ones by Connor.
In the back of the bus.
So, and he was obviously on a different bus the first time, but then we went into the back and said, "I guess we'll have to sit over here by this guy." And, you know, just made a joke about it. And he said, "Man, I'm just chilling back here by myself. You can sit wherever you want." And we just left him alone. And then about 5 minutes later, I started talking to him, having a conversation. And then he asked Mom a couple of questions, and my sister got a selfie with him. And then I said, "Well, you got to check out Mom's ankle monitor. She's a criminal." And so he started asking questions, and of course, then Mom was able to share some things. I think it was a God moment. I really do. And you can tell him the questions that he was asking.
Yeah. Yeah, well, he wanted to know a little bit about my story. And when I first met him, I said, "I'm sorry, I don't know who you are, except my children told me, but I'd like to meet you." I don't know what that did for him, but anyway, then we start talking about my story a little bit. And then we were still on the bus. They were trying to get us off on ice. But I said what I did, and I said I went there to pray for our country, and I told him about being, you know, the God's presence. God told me to carry his presence in the building, and he looks at me and says, "Well, what is that like for God's presence?" I mean, he had all kinds of questions about who God was, kind of thing, you know, a little bit about that, not a whole lot, but he did talk about that. So I think he was very intrigued by the whole thing. And then we get off the bus, and then...
Our folks hate to do this to you. I know that's cruel. Right in the middle of the praying grandma telling us about notorious Conor McGregor, the most famous UFC MMA fighter in the world, but I gotta cut you off because we're out of time for today. So you'll have to get the conclusion of my interview with Rebecca Lawrence this coming Thursday on At the Core. Walker will be with you tomorrow. I'll see you on Thursday. Thanks for listening to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green.
You ever wonder why our society is so ravenous to abort babies? Well, according to a former Satanist, the demonic forces have a bloodlust for the innocents. They sickly believe that the blood sacrifice empowers evil. Make no mistake, we are fighting a spiritual battle as we protect the most innocent among us, babies, in their mother's womb. Preborn stands on the front lines of this battle. Their network of clinics are positioned in the highest abortion areas, often next to abortion mills, where unspeakable evil takes place every day. day. Preborn offers God's love and life to protect hurting women and precious preborn babies. Please make your most generous gift to empower good and rescue precious souls. Every time a baby is saved, which happens 200 times a day, good conquers evil. For just $28, you can sponsor an ultrasound that doubles a baby's chance at life. Donate securely today. Dial pound 250 and say the keyword baby. That's pound 250 or go to preborn.com, preborn.com.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.